Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Season 6, Episode 59, Dave. It's Bengals week, second time around. Steelers looking to solidify their playoff chances. This is a big game, Dave. We've talked about the playoff scenarios. If the Steelers win out, they're in. If they win 3 out of 4, they're probably in. But that's what it's going to take. And it starts on Sunday at Paul Brown Stadium.
Are we sure that if they went out, I mean, is there any possibility that these other teams could be caught, like New England? I don't want to go on record as saying as if they went out, they automatically get in.
They are, because, I'll say it.
Okay. I haven't checked all the possible scenarios. We know when it comes to those, you know, team like the Jets and all, they should be able to beat them. But I just worry about, you know, something weird happening like Denver collapsing or you know, New England collapsing or something like that. Because I don't believe who all's clinched so far in the AFC.
I don't
Nobody.
I don't know that anybody in the AFC is clinched. I think just Carolina.
Yeah, like I said, I haven't worked out those scenarios, but. All right, so where are we on our scale of 1 to 10, a must win? 9?
Yeah, 8. You know, if they lose this game, every game from here on to 10, for sure, almost by definition. So I'll say an 8, but if they get this one, then next week's an 8, and then after that, kind of you just roll along at 8.
How much more confident will you be in this team? I mean, let's face it. They should have won that last game against Cincinnati.
Yeah, I'm sure the Bengals feel like they should have won it more comfortably than they did. Neither team was great offensively. It didn't go at all how I anticipated it going. I don't think it went how you anticipated it going. I think this game will be very different. But turnovers, obviously part of the game.
I'm not, you know, we talked about that heading into that last game, how we thought it was going to be what, something like a 30 to
30s, in the 30s.
Shootout, and it was everything but that. I'm not so sure we get another repeat of what we saw, you know, back in week 8 now, to be quite honest with you. You know, now, you know, more time has elapsed to be able to study and know more about this team. Hey, here's one interesting thing that I wrote about, and you know, there's several factors that took place in that last game that aren't taking place this time around. For starters, Ben Roethlisberger's first game back from injury. So, you know, it seemed like even though he went deep several times in that game, you know, he certainly wasn't as mobile as you would hope he would be. You know, just rusty overall. And that's just for starters. I mean, it goes without saying that his 3 interceptions in that game were costly. And when you look at the other side of football, remember they were missing Will Allen and Stephon Tuitt for that game as well too. Now some people will say, well, Will Allen wasn't that big of a loss, but you know Tuitt, you know, even though Steve McClendon had to play a lot of snaps at left defensive end, and I thought played well in that role. You know, it's definitely you're definitely missing a player there. So, you know, a little bit different personnel here this time around. And speaking of personnel, I guess it's a good time to kind of segue into the injury reports for both teams heading into Friday. And we should have the Friday injury report here, maybe before we get off this podcast. You look at the Steelers, Heath Miller and Matt Spaeth were both limited on Thursday. I don't know what to think about Miller at this point. You know, Friday's obviously going to be a key day for him, but even if he goes limited, I suppose there's a chance that he could play on Sunday, but I wouldn't hold my breath. As far as Matt Spaeth goes,
Spaeth's not
going to
play.
Spaeth's not?
He's not going to play.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have bet otherwise.
The info I've gotten is Heath will be a game-time decision and Spaeth will not go.
Wow. You know, Spaeth finished that game last week as well, too, right? against the Colts, and I saw him get bent over the pile once. I can't remember. Maybe it was a third quarter, somewhere along those lines. You know, he's battled that knee problem, you know, throughout the season here. You know, it's going to be a huge blow if they don't have both those guys.
Well, right, and, you know, that's a real question because they probably don't go – look, it's Friday. They're not going to sign anybody who's not been with the team. Probably can't make a roster move. If he can't go and Spade doesn't go, you know, Will Johnson's going to get – you know, he's going to get reps there for sure. You're going to see what they do with the offensive lineman. If they dress an extra offensive lineman, will Hubbard take any snaps as a – you know, an eligible tight end, but it will make things interesting if you know both those guys can't go.
Yeah, and I think Hubbard is the guy that we'll see the most in there. I kind of doubt we'll see a lot of Will Johnson, to be quite honest with you, as a second tight end in the game. Yeah, you know, I they're probably going to be more comfortable with putting a guy like Hubbard on the end of the line of scrimmage there, and give him, I don't know, 10, 11 snaps that way, you know, coming in reporting as eligible. Boy, yeah, you would have Jesse James and Hubbard in two tight end situations, and this is a Bengals team that really, in my opinion, you have to be able to run the football first and foremost, you know, to be able to kind of loosen things up. So, you know, Matt Spaeth did practice on a limited basis on Thursday, so you know, we'll see what the injury report here says in a little bit. Boy, you really hope at this point he's able to come, you know, play and give you something at this point with the ribs. But we'll know in a little bit here, I guess. Practicing fully on Thursday were Sammy Coates, William Gay, James Harrison, Greg Warren, Sean Spence. Really, the only two. The only one, really, I think there's a question mark of that group would be Sean Spence, but being, you know, with that hamstring, but being as how he's back practicing fully, it looks good for all those guys. William Gay's out of concussion protocol. He hasn't missed a game in through, you know, his entire career, so you wouldn't expect that to start. On the other side with the Bengals, they, you know, they've got some question marks at some key positions as well, too, starting with Pac-Man Adam Jones. He started the week with his foot in a cast. That cast has since been removed. He still hasn't practiced. Reportedly will not practice on Friday. Has a boot on that foot. Told a reporter earlier in the week that he wasn't going to play against the Steelers, but you know, we'll see if that's a you know, just some gamesmanship relates to them. George Ioka, a safety of theirs, didn't practice on Thursday. Sounds like he's going to be limited on Friday. And then when you look at a couple of their other cornerbacks that are banged up, Leon Hall missed that game last week, I believe, against the Browns with a back injury that's bothered him for, you know, all season. So even if he plays, you know, they have to kind of be worried about him there. But everything else looks fairly clean on their injury report. Looks like they're going to have Tyler Eifert back this week as well.
All right, so when you think about, you know, where this goes, Dave, I mean, we did, you know, look, you were dead on in terms of Ben coming back, and that first drive was a great drive against the Bengals. Steelers went right down the field, but whether it was rust or, you know, mentally or physically or whatever, he didn't play a great game after that. Steelers didn't put up a lot of points. It's a different offense right now, man, putting up 30-plus a game, four games in a row, which is a team record. You know, when you attack this Bengals team, same thing. I mean, we talked about how Heath was available that game. He had 10 catches for whatever it was, 100-plus yards. But still, the Steelers took shots deep that weren't there. And we've seen them continually take shots deep. And it has been incredibly successful as a strategy over the course of the season. But the Bengals are likely to play kind of a cover two shell and, you know, and not give the Steelers that kind of stuff. So is this a game where Ben has to dial it down a little bit and look for whoever it is, Jesse James, Marcus Wheaton, D'Angelo Williams, and just take the 7-yarders all day long, or keep taking shots deep and into that shell?
Well, I don't think he's not going to not throw deep. It seems to be his nature. But if you go back specifically to that Week 8 game against the Bengals, Roethlisberger was 3 of 13, only 3 of 13 on his deep passes, and his three interceptions came on what was termed deep balls. So, you know, not a good success rate at all there. And you're right. You know, the Bengals like to play a lot of two deep zone, I mean, too deep cover two shell over the top and try to prevent the big play from happening. And the only way that you can kind of force them out of that is to get them to bring a safety up, i.e. either being able to run the football or trying to attack the middle of the field, you know, really the way they did with Heath Miller in that last game. You know, that's why that middle of the field was open so much. So I think you'll see a lot of the what we call RPO, run pass option, in this game, to either, you know, regardless of who the tight end is in this, whether it be Jesse James or Heath Miller, to try to hit some quick strikes that way. I think also you're going to see some Antonio Brown, you know, some quick, you know, quick slants to him in this one. I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, some of these wide receiver screens out of the run pass option, depending on where if those Bengal cornerbacks are playing up on the line of scrimmage or not. But I think you have to stress this defense by widening, by trying to get those safeties widened as much as possible. So I think a guy that could quite possibly, you know, play a little bit larger role in this game might be Marcus Wheaton over in the middle, David.
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, that's what you're going to look for. Look, you're not going to abandon your two guys in terms of Martavis and Antonio, but slants, crosses, curls, that kind of stuff. I do think the middle of the field, I do think trying to run the ball against the Bengals is something that you'll see the Steelers kind of pound it aggressively early and try and loosen things up, bring a safety down. If they can get a safety down, then take their shots there. But it's going to be interesting. I think in this game, it will be interesting to see how often AB goes in motion. Either a couple times he went in motion out of the backfield early in the game against the Colts last week. That's probably the first time we've seen that this year. Or, you know, even it lines up in the slot. So I think they'll try and get him free that way, and that'll be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think, too, maybe some misdirection stuff in this one to get the defense moving one way. I think you'll see them try to do some more stuff with some false keys by pulling David DeCastro and then trying to pass out of that. The only downside to that, though, is Geno Atkins will shoot that gap on you in a heartbeat if you can't block down on that. And that's not as good as Marcus Gilbert has been this season, that's not one of his strong points. So I don't expect them to do that a lot, but you know, I would like to see them try to do stuff to get the flow of the defense going one way and then work against it with a quick dump off to D'Angelo Williams out of the backfield. Or you know, something, even, you know, try to get Nick's a ball or two in this game as well, too. It's not going to be easy attacking this defense. I mean, I think you're going to have to eat the elephant one bite at a time, so to speak, because they just don't like to give up big plays. They like to play downhill and keep everything in front of them and hope that you take a shot down deep in order to try to pick you off.
So on the other side, the Bengals, they got tons of talent. They've got two backs to kind of mix it up, both about the same yardage coming into the game, but very different styles, very different number of carries. Geo is going to be in there in the spread. He's been carrying it for, you know, 5-plus yards a carry. Jeremy Hill's, you know, the quote-unquote downhill type of runner, physical guy. Eifert, 12 TD catches, I think. You know, A.J. Green. Steelers are going to have their hands full here defensively, Dave. But they really, I thought they played, even though they didn't win the game, I thought they played their best defensive game of the year against the Bengals. With the talent that the Bengals have offensively, they were able to get pressure on Dalton, and he didn't have a very good game, just like they were able to get pressure on Carson Palmer, and he didn't have a very good game. So to me, that's the key. The Bengals have a good O-line, but they're going to have to make sure, however they want to dial it up. They've done it some different ways. Keith Butler has shown an ability to scheme for a game, which he did against the Colts. It wasn't great early, only dropping, you know, only sending three and dropping eight. Really hurt them on the touchdown drive. We saw that, you know, we saw Hasselbeck miss a couple passes early in that game. His first two throws of the game were awful. Missed Andre Johnson for a touchdown, then threw an interception. And then the game got out of hand for them, and the Steelers could really just tee off and get after him. So it went their way in that respect. But for me, this whole game, Dave, is going to be predicated on the Steelers getting at Andy Dalton.
Yeah, and teams overall haven't been great at doing that this year, right? I mean, if you look at the time, you know, the amount of times he's been sacked and how he's been sacked, a lot of those times are of course third and eight or more situations. I think if I have my stats correct that I looked at earlier, and he's not a guy that throws interceptions. I just posted something on Twitter a little while ago. 6 interceptions so far this year, David. 5 of those have come on him throwing more than 15 yards down the field. And most of those situations were obviously, you know, third and long, second and long, situation. In fact, I think nearly all of them were 8 yards or more when he threw, the interception. So he's not one, outside of the bad interception that he threw against the Steelers down in the red zone, back in week 8. He's just not a guy that makes mistakes, and he's not a guy also that ends up flat on his back a lot this season. So, you know, the Steelers are going to have to Andy Dalton has not only been good, you know, with the short ball this season, he's been good with the deep ball as well, too. So he almost lets you kind of pick his poison. And, you know, he will be very patient and take what is given him underneath.
I saw that you pointed that out. I hadn't realized that he was throwing the deep ball as well as he has this year.
Yeah, he really has. I wonder if I got these pulled up real quick here, but I'll find them for you. But I think he's over 50% on his deep balls this year.
So let me ask you a question, and you know, Steelers fans are going to they're instantaneously going to react toward the Steelers side of this question. But Lewis Riddick, who I've really come to like, and I know you like him as well, as an NFL analyst, guy from Pitt, who I love about him is he is so damn candid, and he's not afraid about saying something's bad. You know, there are a lot of guys who tell you who's great. Okay, that's great because that's easy, complimenting guys. But Lewis Riddick can tell you who's bad. He was asked who's the best receiving core in the NFL, and he said the Steelers. And he said, and this caught me a little bit by surprise because, you know, were Jordy Nelson healthy, the Packers would be in the conversation, and they're really struggling now. Randall Cobb's not having a very good year. And you say, okay, well, you know, who else is there? He said, the answer is the Steelers, with all due respect to the Bengals. And so then he got asked the question, and this is the obvious question, and we talk about it all the time. He said, would you take A.J. Green over Antonio Brown? And the answer is every person who watches the game understands that if you're getting a guy 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", versus a guy 5'11", and everything else is equal, you take the bigger guy. Well, everything else isn't equal because nobody does what Antonio Brown does with the ball in their hands. And you and I think, Dave, we're going to lean to Antonio Brown over any other receiver in the NFL. And I think that's fair, and I think Lewis Riddick did kind of too. But the physical gifts still matter. And the question would be, you know, if you're looking 2 years down the road and you had to guess right now, would you rather have Martavis Bryant or Antonio Brown? And look, there's no right answer, but there are plenty of people who are going to say Martavis Bryant because he seems to have kind of almost the same physical gifts in terms of elusiveness as Antonio Brown with the size and the speed. And so when comparing the receiving core, even if you gave the Bengals a push on A.J. Green and Antonio Brown, the Steelers are winning the second one, but they're probably losing the third one. You know, when you go with their two guys, Sanu, however, you know, they want to line them up, Marvin Jones and Sanu against Martavis Bryant and Wheaton, that might be a push too. But, you know, as much as we can like Heath Miller, Tyler Eifert, you probably take Tyler Eifert over Heath Miller at this point in the world where they are today. So, Dave, who has the better receiving core?
Wow. I think it's a push across the board right as we stand right now.
Yeah. But the answer is it's damn close, right?
Oh yeah, most definitely. Their guys just don't get the exposure that an AB and Martavis does right now. You know, everybody can tell you that AJ Green, you know, probably nearly anybody that plays football, fantasy football, can tell you AJ Green's on that team. But how many can tell you that Jones and Sanu are the other two over there?
Yeah,
you know. I realize most can't, but the average football fan, I guess, is kind of what I'm saying. And when you go to the Steelers, everybody can name Antonio Brown. I'm willing to bet most can, because we're a highlight world, we're a touchdown world. People have seen Martavis Bryant, I'm sure. They however, wouldn't know Marcus Wheaton and Darius Hayward Bay from Adam's house cat, the average football fan here. Going back to Andy Dalton real quick, 42 of 80 on deep passes so far this season, 10 touchdowns. So nearly a quarter of his completed deep throws have been touchdowns. Additionally, we already covered this, five of his deep ball five of his deep passes have been intercepted so far this season. I think you absolutely have to make Andy Dalton beat you deep in this game. I really, really do. We talk a lot about how the corners play off and all this. Because Andy Dalton will take that 5 yard out in a heartbeat. I mean, he's patient like that. It will be interesting to see, though, now that they have Brandon Boykin on the field, watching more of a AJ Green versus a Ross Cockrell matchup. That might end up being the biggest matchup in this game, because it was clear how they used Boykin in the game against the Colts. In fact, we went all the way through and broke those down according to our charting. Boykin obviously was only on the field in nickel situations, and Cockrell was mainly the outside nickel corner when Boykin was on the field. Now, that, of course, changed after William Gay left with that head injury. But if you go back and look at the plays prior to that happening, it was primarily Cockrell on the outside opposite Gay and Boykin in the inside there. Now, against that game against the Bengals, you obviously had Blake on the outside quite a bit on the left side against A.J. Green. So that might be the matchup to watch here this week, is how can Cockrell handle a guy like A.J. Green, and when the Bengals get the Steelers in base formation and get Blake out there on the field, with how many shots do they take deep against Blake in those situations?
I'm going to be interested to see if from the get-go here, Brandon Boykin is the guy, because for those who weren't following play by play of the situation in the game, the way I was watching it, Dave, and I don't know that I had this exactly correct, but Boykin didn't get in the first two series the Colts had the ball, and they were both off turnovers deep in their own territory, and obviously they came away with only 3 points, so success for the defense. But what we saw was the first time in, he came in for Cockrell. And then most of the time, the rest of the way, he came in for Blake. And I'll say it again, you hit it right on the head during the week last week, that you expected Blake to be in there for running downs, for obvious running downs, and Boykin to work in obvious passing situations. And that is exactly what happened. And Blake, I think, ended up getting kind of 55% of the defensive snaps. So if you think about Steelers in a base or first down situations, or however you want to think about it, that's the way it went. And so I think, from the get-go here, you'll see Boykin getting snaps. And the Bengals are obviously a team that are going to come out in three wide sets often. And, I'm kind of curious, I guess, is what I'm getting to, is I'm kind of curious to see if the first snap of the game, if the Bengals have the personnel to go three wide, if Boykin's on the field.
Well, here's the full breakdown that I did on the site earlier this week, David. Throw out the final 12 defensive snaps of the game, because William Gay wasn't in there at that point. Boykin played in the nickel throughout the game, obviously. Didn't play during, as you said, didn't play during the Steelers' first two defensive series. However, I think that you have to take into account that those were short area field situations.
Yeah, and right. It was quick, sudden change, bang, two turnovers. Go in there, and I absolutely agree that was a more of a consequence of the situation than the plan.
And then, when you think about opposing offenses, sometimes down in red zones, they will try to spread you out and run. as well too. So that might have been Keith Butler's thinking, you know, as far as that went. Now, as you mentioned, first snap in the game with Boykin came with 4:15 left in the first quarter, and at that point, he and Blake were manning the outside spots, which was why Butler did that. I don't know. Maybe it was just to get them thinking that that might be the matchup that they were going to see. And that, I believe that was a second and long situation on Boykin's first snap in the game. The very next play was the third and long, and I believe Blake and Cockrell, or Blake and Gay and Boykin were all on the field there, and that's when Boykin registered his interception. The next 28 snaps that Boykin played in that game, it was him, Gay, and Cockrell on the field. So, you know, there you go. I mean, that's your nickel, you know, outside of the red zone right there. And I will be shocked. Look, if I'm Andy Dalton and I have my 11 personnel out there, and I look across there and I see Blake on the outside in nickel, I'm giving A.J. Green a hand signal or something. I'm taking my shot at him. Right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm laughing for the obvious reason. Yeah, why not?
I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if Keith Butler stays on script the way he did in those final, you know, those 28 snaps before Gay went out of the game. On the 9 snaps that Blake played, here you go. Here's something else that, boy, our charting, man, my guys, Alex just does a fantastic job with this thing, you know, with our charting and all like that. On the 9 snaps that Blake played after the first 3 Colts offensive series and up until Gay left, all of them included the Colts having 2 or more tight ends on the field.
Tell me again, of the 9 snaps that...
Of the 9 snaps that Blake played, yep, after the Colts' first 3 offensive series,
right,
you already
right,
know what
right.
the first 2 offensive
yep.
series are. The 3rd offensive series, I just told you, that's the one that culminated with a Boykin interception.
Yep.
Of the 9 snaps after that, up until Gay left injured in the fourth quarter, all of them included the Colts having 2 or more tight ends on the field.
Wow, there you go. That's Jerry Olsavsky up top, you know, who and the guys. So how for those who don't know how it works is the Steelers, there are a couple guys up top in the press box whose job is to immediately relay to Keith Butler the personnel on the field for the opposing team. So as soon as he hears, you know, they'll hear 2 tight ends. You know, I don't know the verbiage that they use, whether they use numbers.
Kings, queens,
yeah,
ace.
Yeah, however they want to use the verbiage. And that's it. So you hit it on the head, and that's a really good job by Alex to recognize that. So that's when he's going to play, and that's when he's not going to play. 2 tight ends, bang, Blake.
Absolutely. And here's, you know, if you go back and you look at some film on the Bengals, what they will do sometimes, though, being as how they have, you know, a very good tight end in Eifert that you can do so many things on, you know, they might show you some, they might roll out some 12 personnel out there, meaning 2 tight ends, and then, you know, do what the Patriots like doing, flex out from there. You know, they get your personnel on the field, and then they dictate what they want to do from that point. That's why I say there will probably be situations in this game that look like run situations, that look like the Bengals have run personnel out there. And at that point, I think, you know, you'll see, you know, probably maybe A.J. Green go in motion or something. But I, you know, if I'm Hugh Jackson, I'm trying to get as many matchups as I can with Blake on the outside, whether it be playing off, whether it be, you know, a cover 2 type situation, or just, you know, a single man high type situation. But that's the chess match inside the game that I'll really be interested to see. And obviously, being as how they're a power running team, though, you know, I'm definitely not going to be afraid to try to run at Blake when he is on the field to the edge and see if I can't get a block or 2 and see if I can't get Blake to miss a tackle.
Okay, let me ask you the obvious question, because we've talked a lot about the strategy, but we haven't talked about the rationale. Do you like the rationale? Does it make sense to have Blake on the field, you know, in run situations and be there, you know, essentially half the time?
I don't love it, but I mean, what's the alternative, I guess? I mean, to put Cockrell out there's not as physical as Blake is. So are you going to find yourself, you know, more susceptible? In short, I guess what you're asking, I would rather take my chances of them not being able to beat me with AJ Green in any situation.
You don't ever want to put them out there, is what you're saying.
Basically.
Yeah.
I mean, I am worried about Cockrell against a run, though.
It goes back to what we talked about before, right? Your defensive backs are supposed their goal is to stop the pass. I mean, yeah, look, their run support is important. I'm not ignoring it. I'm not dismissing it. But have your best guys who can cover the pass out on the field to cover the pass.
And let me tell you, Hugh Jackson is, boy, if he's not a head coach next year, the Steelers fans should be praying for
somebody. What college was apparently somebody? USC. Did you know that? USC asked to interview him?
That makes sense, right? I mean, he came from there, right?
Did he? I don't know that off the top of my head, but
I think I heard a little something about that. I know he's from California. He was the offensive coordinator at USC in 1997. He was there all the way through 2000 until he hit the NFL. He got his start. Got a start at Pacific College as a graduate assistant, Cal State Fullerton, coached running backs, wide receivers with the London Monarchs of the WLAF, spent some time at Arizona State, was at Cal, University of California for one season as offensive coordinator / quarterbacks, and then USC from 97 to 2000. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know? All right, so, you know, we look.
I mean, how nervous are you about the defense in this game?
Oh, I'm nervous about the defense every game. I mean, let's be clear. It's very simple. The defense has been the same every game they've played, more or less. They haven't been great in too many games in terms of the yards. And the turning point. Just look at one number. Look at how many turnovers they created. And when they got turnovers, they kept points off the board. And when they didn't, they generally didn't. So it's that simple. They're not going to have very few defenses in today's NFL are going to just stop you. And, you know, I don't expect that to happen in this game either. And can the Steelers generate pressure on Dalton and get turnovers? And that's going to decide whether, you know, they give up 17 points or 30 points.
You drop an 8?
No.
At any point?
No.
This isn't Matt Hasselbeck, right?
That game, no. Yeah.
I'm with you. At least they're having to look at that, you know. right. They're probably looking at it.
Throw that game.
Yeah, probably looking at it and laughing.
Yeah, throw that game tape out.
Yeah. Man, Stephon, how would you evaluate over the last quarter of the season, or basically since Stephon Tuitt has returned from that knee sprain? How would you evaluate him?
Yeah, well, you know, I asked Mike that question, and I said, you know, since the injury, he's not been impactful, and, you know, as Tomlin, he's not going to throw him under the bus. He said, you know, it doesn't always show up in the numbers in terms of being impactful, but the answer is he's not been impactful.
I think you got to get after Andy. I think you got to send numbers at him, and I think he's been pretty decent against numbers so far this season. But I want him to prove it with, you know, against me. I want to show him certain looks. I want to rotate. You know, I want to not tip my hand in the defensive backfield and try to rotate the safety down or up. Just give him some exotic looks, some double. You know, I'd sugar the middle. You know, show him some double A gap stuff. Keith Butler's going to have to call one heck of a game, and the Steelers defense is going to have to really, really execute in this game, because I don't think you can count on Andy Dalton making the mistakes that he made, you know, in that Week 8 game. I mean, he was good in that game, but he wasn't great. And if he's above average, he's going to be able to move. He's going to be able to move that team down the field, I have a feeling.
Yeah. All right.
I think we got the final practice report coming across here now.
Yeah, just looking at that as well.
Everybody practiced today, and everybody is probable.
Well, that's great news because, as I told you, somebody told me, you know, somebody who knows told me that they really didn't think Spaeth would play. So the reality is you need at least one of those tight ends available, and if they get them both, all the better. So that is good news.
Yeah, positive news there. So it sounds like we'll have our two tight end. And look, I'd run that split zone. I'd run that counter, that Georgia counter, as early as I possibly could. And I wouldn't. I don't necessarily think it's a good idea to come out throwing the football. Roethlisberger, you just absolutely can't turn the ball over in this game because I don't think Dalton is. And you know, plain and simple. So, you know, you're going to have to run after the football. You're going to have to tackle better. And it really has to be, I hate to say, it's going to have to be a perfect game.
I kind of agree with you. And you know what? Steelers are capable of playing a better game offensively than they have. I mean, the funny thing is, they put up 30 against the Seahawks and 45 against the Colts, and they didn't play a perfect game. In both games, they turned it over a couple times. In both games, they left points in the red zone. Honestly, this team it feels like they should score a touchdown every time they have the ball, and that's not realistic, of course. But they can even do better than they have, and that's the good thing. And I'm with you, Dave. That's what it's going to take this week. They're going to have to outscore them.
Or they're going to have Andy Dalton have one of those clunkers. And, I mean, yeah, I still got to go back. I want to watch that game against the Houston Texans again. And I'm still trying to remember if that was the game.
How many clowns you got in that room right now?
What's that?
How many clowns you got in that clown car you got right now?
What do you mean?
That honking horn we hear in the back.
Oh, that's not any more irritating than that cereal bowl of yours.
That's my glass of ice water, man. I got to rehydrate.
Damn, put you on some damn medicine.
I need an IV.
Put some medicine on you.
Every time I hear it, I think of a dude with a bow tie and a red nose.
That's me. We start to sound like Tiffany now, my wife. That thing drives a stew. Imagine that thing going off at 3 a.m. I got it set up.
Thank goodness it's Friday, huh?
Yeah, we should probably have stopped the podcast right now to edit.
To digress.
Yeah, we'll let them know what goes on behind the scenes here. For folks that want to know what that is, it's my phone. I have it set to go off for certain type of alerts on the internet.
For fun.
Yeah, which pretty much means it's going off all day. All right, where were we?
So Arizona gets a win last night. Questionable decision at the end for the Vikings to kick a field goal or run a play.
They should have kicked.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to play Friday morning quarterback after something like that. But Blair Walsh had already nailed one from, 54?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
In the game. So, I mean, you're third down. You're out of timeouts. What do you hope to accomplish on that
right,
play?
What are you getting, 10 yards to just make it a little easier?
Yeah, I mean, how many bad things can happen when a quarterback drops back? Versus how many things good can happen, you know. I think they made a mistake there, most definitely. Look, if something goes bad with your snap or whatnot, I don't know. I guess they were out of timeout, so it probably wouldn't mattered. You know.
By the way, I think that whole logic is one of the most flawed things that people talk about. And I was really thinking about this during the game, Dave. Well before we got into the situation at the end of the game, is how often do we actually see a fumbled snap? I mean, famously, it happened in a playoff game. That made a huge difference for the Giants, but I mean, we don't see it. I mean, there probably aren't 10 a year around the league, let alone for one team. So, look, I understand if it's a situation where it makes no difference and you kick on second or third down versus fourth down, but if you have an opportunity to do things that make a difference, you go make a difference. In this case, this was a bad choice because of the timeouts. It was just the right thing to do to kick on third, not because of the potential of the snap problem.
Yeah, and as you know, you want to kind of reward, I think, your offense. I mean, Teddy played. That's the most passing yards he's had in a game during his career, you know?
You know, I said yesterday on my show that I hadn't seen Teddy play much. I don't see the Vikings for whatever reason. They're one of the teams I see very infrequently. They're not on national television a lot. Peterson looked great. Well, I'll tell you, Dave, what struck me and I came away with was his arm slot. I feel like I'm talking about baseball. But Teddy really throws from kind of more of a three-quarter motion than, you know, almost any quarterback I can think of.
Philip Rivers-esque.
Yeah, exactly.
Without me feeling like I got to slam my shoulder into the wall when he, that's the thing about watching Philip Rivers. I hurt when it hurts watching him play. But he does have a little flick to him, right?
Yep.
You know? But I think he's matured. I think he still has room to improve with Teddy. I think he's smart enough. I think he makes look. I'd much rather have my quarterback throw the football out of play 15 yards on the sideline instead of him trying to force things. And I think there's a little bit of knock on Teddy right now that, you know, he might give up on a play too soon. But, you know, early on in his career, like he is right now, I don't have an issue with it. And I thought he made some nice throws in that game. And look at his receiving core. I mean, really, I mean, Diggs and who else?
They don't have a lot.
Mike Wallace, I mean, 30.
And Mike got one. Mike got one.
Yeah, Mike got one. Second one of the season. You know, he came into that game with 30 catches for 300 yards. Someone asked me, when's his contract up? But technically not until after the 2017 season. But I think he's scheduled to earn something like $10 or $11 million with the Vikings next year. That's not happening. And there's no dead money associated with Mike Wallace because the Dolphins had to eat that as part of the trade. So
did Mike Wallace make a good decision for Mike Wallace?
Mike Wallace got paid.
Yeah, so I'm saying, so he got paid once, and he got paid a lot of money. So, well, I don't know, probably, what do you think he banked, 30?
What was his signing bonus, do you remember?
I mean, his signing bonus was like, I think it was
30?
Well, his signing bonus wasn't 30, but maybe it was 30 in signing bonus and guarantees. Yeah, maybe. So you can't ever say it's a bad decision, right? Even if his career ended right there.
He's going to make
money again. He's a $5 million receiver for sure, I think, after this year. Even with the pedestrian numbers he's putting up, somebody, I bet, pays him $5 million.
I will be shocked if a team pays him $5 million.
But what do you think he goes for? Three?
Three or less.
Oh, really? Okay. Interesting. Well, let's keep an eye on that. That'll be something interesting to watch. All right, so
$27 million fully guaranteed. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it sounds exactly right because he was making 11.5 a year, was kind of AAV, I think.
Yeah, it was $60,000 total value, $12 million average yearly value, and $27 million fully guaranteed. So
he's banked 30. So the Vikings paying him something now. So he's probably made $30 million. So obviously, it's a good decision. The question is, would it have been a better decision to take the Steelers' money, play with Ben, put up huge numbers, and now be looking at another contract again? You know, we'll never know the answer, but
he would have never got a second contract from the
Steelers. No, but I mean, he'll get it from somebody, and he'd have much better numbers coming out of Pittsburgh than he does coming out of Miami or Minnesota playing with a real quarterback.
Well, now we know why. I mean, remember people questioning that move at the time, you know, letting Mike Wallace get away. Obvious that they made the right decision.
Yeah.
He is.
He made it for him. He made the decision for the Steelers.
He's a one-trick pony. Exactly what Mike Tomlin used to tease him about.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he is. I mean, he's a horrible route runner, questionable body catcher. He's everything he was in college. Everything.
Yeah, didn't really develop.
And never really developed out there. And didn't, you know, once you speed guys like that, lose that step, that's it, you know. And he might be there now. How old is he, 29?
Ooh, wow. Good question. Is he that old?
Seemed like yesterday, right? Oh. 2009 draft. Yeah, he's 29 years old, I think, David.
All right. All right,
boy, you're old.
Let's get to our picks. You're up on me 1-0. You had the Vikes. I got it wrong with Arizona. So here we go. We got Buffalo at Philadelphia. That's a pick'em game, and all of a sudden it's a really interesting game because, you know, we're not really focused on the teams behind the Steelers, but the Bills are the one team that I scares me a little bit in terms of running the table and being a good football team. I picked against the Eagles, I think, for the first time all year last week, and I paid for it. So let me guarantee the Eagles lose again and get back on the Eagles at home in a pick'em game.
I guarantee the Eagles lose, and I'm just going to guarantee it because the Eagles are going to lose. Rex is going to get after them. I just don't see. We know why Philadelphia won that game. New England lost it. That's why.
Oh, yeah. You know, by the way, we talk. You know, you and I talk about what a genius Belichick is all the time. He screwed up the clock at the end of the first half. They ended up punting when they didn't necessarily have to. That got blocked for a touchdown. Special teams were always a New England strength. The Eagles got them a couple times, returned one for a touchdown. So they'll come out flying. All right, you got Bills, I got Eagles. Man, the Atlanta Falcons stink. Matt Ryan stinks. The Carolina Panthers are 8-point favorites at home. Give me the Falcons.
Yeah, man, boy, that defense of Carolina's. We're talking about that all season. And Cam is playing great. I'm not going against Carolina with Atlanta being on the road here. So give me Carolina to cover that.
Blaine Gabbert resurrecting his career, which is probably one of the more shocking storylines of 2015. The Niners go to Cleveland. Johnny Manziel at quarterback, Cleveland -2. Give me Johnny.
No, thank you. Give me Blaine in it. You know what? If you go to Cleveland, if you have tickets to that game, if you put your tickets underneath your windshield wiper to go do other things, you know, while you're away, if you're parking near the stadium, you come back, there'll be more tickets there. That used to happen years ago with the Saints. It used to be an old joke used to use with the Saints back when people wore bags over their heads. Give me San Francisco to win this outright.
All right, Chicago -3.5. Against Washington on the road. Skins took a bad one against Dallas. That one really hurt their chances. Everybody 5-7, Dallas 4-8 in that division. The Bears took a bad one too. They're having a better season than I thought. And John Fox and, you know, Gase doing a good job with Jay Cutler, but he threw a really bad pick six in the last week. But I'll take the Bears -3.5 at home.
Wow. Man, you just – I don't know which one. I'm definitely not playing this one personally because I don't. I think Washington's a better team. So with that said, I smell the home rat here. So give me Chicago to cover and win it by a touchdown.
Most disappointing team in the NFL, maybe the Rams. They're certainly in the conversation. They're getting terrible quarterback play. The Lions have turned their season around. That Hail Mary really is painful. Do they go into St. Louis and win, giving 3 points? Probably, but I'll still take the Rams plus the hook, plus the field goal at home.
Yeah, Detroit's playing some good ball with Jim Bob Cooter right now. So I'm gonna stick with Detroit. Didn't they? Did they put Quinn on IR?
Didn't see.
I think that's coming, but. Let me ask you, is Jeff Fisher's job in jeopardy? I think you hinted at that a couple weeks ago. Do you think Jeff Fisher loses his job?
I don't know how he doesn't. I mean, if there's one guy, I love the stat. You know, the last coach to have 4 non-winning seasons and retain his job in Tennessee was Jeff Fisher. And Jeff Fisher's doing it again. I think you got to fire him. And I don't hate Jeff Fisher. I think he's a good coach, but it's not evident by his record for sure.
Yeah, give me Detroit to cover.
Chargers +10 at Kansas City. Steelers fans root hard for Phillip Rivers and the Chargers to get it going. I'll take 10, Dave. That's enough for me to take them.
I will, too. Man, you just they're a bad team, though. San Diego is, and Kansas City is one of those ones that just waits for you to shoot yourself in the foot, you know? I don't know why, but give me Chargers plus the big number.
All right. New Orleans at Tampa. I'm all of a sudden on the bandwagon for these young quarterbacks. Give me Jameis, give me Marcus Mariota. Tampa's laying 4.5. The Saints, I don't know, there's talk about whether they trade their coach in the offseason, Sean Payton. who knows what's going on. They should have probably traded, you know, it's easy to say now, but I think we said it before the season. If you're trading Jimmy Graham and Stills and you're rebuilding your roster and kind of, you know, doing things all over, you might have moved Drew Brees. I would think they'd look at that again in the offseason. I'll take Tampa minus 4.5.
New Orleans traded some punches with Carolina, didn't they?
They did.
And for that reason only, I'll have them up on the uptick here. I have them beating Tampa outright. I like this game. New Orleans plus points.
Colts at the Jags in a pick'em game. Man, Allen Robinson having a year. I thought when the Jags started to turn things around, it would be the defense that did it before the offense. It hasn't been. But they, I do like where they're headed, and I like Bortles, and I like Robinson, and I like Yeldon. I like kind of where they are. I think they win this game and win it. You know, Colts have won 16 in a row in the division. I think we see that change today.
Yeah, that's an interesting streak right there. And I'm with you. Streaks are made to be broken. Give me Jacksonville at home.
Jets minus 7 to the Titans. This is an interesting one too, Dave. Steelers fans are obviously rooting for the Titans and Marcus Mariota. I like the Jets. I was surprised they had that little bump in the road when they lost to Oakland and Buffalo, I think it was. But they've turned things back around. They're right in the playoff picture. But I think 7's too many. I think Tennessee's okay. I'll take 7.
Yeah, I don't think 7's enough here, to be quite honest with you. Todd Bowles will have this team. If you're a Steelers fan, obviously you're rooting for Tennessee in this one, and for Marcus Mariota have a big game. Revis going to play in this one? Sounds like it, right?
He practiced today, but when in no contact, he still needs to be cleared, but looks like he may go.
Yeah, I don't think Tennessee can just score enough points, you know, and I think Fitzpatrick, Brandon Marshall, you know, Chris Iyer, I just think it's too much, David. So I'm going to have the Jets cover this one.
Pats minus 3 at Houston.
No way New England loses 2 in a row, right?
Would it be 3 in a row?
Would it be 3 in a row?
It'd be a lot in a short period of time. How's that? But Edelman's back to practice.
It would be 3 in a row. They lost to the Broncos. They lost to the Eagles.
So Edelman is back practicing. He's not going to play. Amendola, I assume, is going to play. Gronk has to be close. I don't know what happens, but I'm with you. 3's not enough. They might run over the Texans.
Yeah, something's going to happen. A turnover or something in this game. I can't see him losing, that's for sure. So the question becomes a scoreboard. But I think New England covers on the road.
Denver's laying 7 to the Raiders. That's too many. You know, Denver's obviously a really good team. But give me Derek Carr plus 7. Touchdowns too many.
Boy, Brock Osweiler's deep ball stats. Man, I think he's only completed 3 deep balls so far since he's taken over. I was surprised, really surprised to see that, to be quite honest with you. That defense, though, that Denver defense, and I made a mistake the last week. I said, who did I say was out? Von Miller. I meant the one on the other side. Who's that, Dumervil?
Yeah, Dumervil.
Dumervil's the one missing time here. But regard, that Denver defense is good. I think they'll force Carr into some mistakes. So I think Denver covers this at home.
Little breaking news for sports fans of the summer. Jason Hayward is signing with the Cubs. Look out, Loretta. Holy cow, the Cubs loaded. All right, let's go down to Dallas, Green Bay. Green Bay minus 6.5. I like Dallas. I like Dallas even with Castle playing quarterback, but I'm going to take Green Bay. How's that?
Yeah, I think Green Bay's going to blow them out in this one. I don't see any other scenario here, so give me Green Bay to cover.
Seahawks, Ravens, I don't have a line on it, Dave. You got one?
It was on the board at Seattle, minus 11.5 on the road.
I'll take them.
Yeah, I will too, especially as it looks like Jimmy Clausen might play in this game.
Yeah, cool.
Give me Seattle to win big. That's going to be ugly and so fun to watch.
All right, Dave, Paul Brown Stadium, 1 o'clock, Pittsburgh.
Well, you got Giants, Miami.
Oh, yeah, Monday night game. Who cares? What's that one?
One and a half, the Giants.
I'll take the Giants.
I'll take the Giants as well. What we got? Let's get to the Steelers game.
1 o'clock, Paul Brown Stadium. This should be fun. It really should be a fun game. I'm interested to watch it. I'm looking forward to the matchups. The tactical game on both sides. Ben airing it out against the shell, whether he takes what they give him, whether they continue to throw deep, how the Steelers line up, what their alignment is, what their scheme is defensively against a really potent offense with a legit MVP candidate in Andy Dalton. Dave, I do think this is going to be what we thought the first game was going to be. I think you're going to have to outscore them, and I think the Steelers will. And I think the Steelers will put up a ton of points again, and I'm going to give the Steelers this one 38-33.
No way. Goodness gracious. Vegas is going to take your money, David. probably with the way that line is going to take ours as well, take mine as well, too. But, we talked earlier about how I think Steelers got to play a perfect or near perfect game. They're going to have to get some help from Andy Dalton. I think they're going to be able to do. Look,
just the late Jeff Hobson just tweeted. So we latest information: Adam Jones doubtful, Georgia Loca questionable.
Okay, and that might play a big factor in this game as well too. I think I think both teams will be able to score more than they did in the last meeting, but I still think it's going to be a relatively close game. I've got Steelers 23-20 winning this with a last minute field goal.
All right, we're both on the Steelers. all right, okay. We got
what's the narrative? What's the Monday morning narrative?
I don't think there will be one. If they win, the narrative will be they're going to the playoffs and look the heck out for the Steelers. If they lose in a close game, it'll be okay. Well, they know what they got to do from here. If they get blown out, maybe it's wow, this defense really isn't very good.
The Madden simulation that the guys at Cincinnati Inquirer got a hold of has a 20-0 Bengals shutout.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, well, whatever.
Okay, we'll be back on Monday and hopefully recapping a Steelers win. Real quick, some more donations came in. Want to make sure we thank these people. Francesco Nera. I hope I pronounced that right. Thank you for your donation. Victor, our old buddy Victor Perry. Victor's probably been listening since episode one. Victor, we appreciate it. Happy holidays to you. Drew Hardman, thank you for the donation. Michael Steigerwald, I think we hit him last time. Andy Wright, thank you for the donation. Folks, we certainly do appreciate the support. It's hard to believe we've done this for six seasons now here, and we try to do them three times a week during the season for you and two times a week during the off season. So if you feel like donating, do so by going to SteelersDepot.com and hitting the donate button. That'll take you to PayPal. You can follow me on Twitter at SteelersDepot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. I got a couple of new writers, contributors starting on the site, so look for their stuff starting next week as well too. And as always, I hope you're reading my content, Alex's content, Matthew Marksey's content. David Todd contributes once a week on the site as well too. Got a lot of great contributors on Steelers Depot, and make sure you're also listening and supporting David's show on 970 ESPN as well. David, have a great weekend.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.